I think back to when we started the podcast and you were like, Whitney, we have to do a podcast. And I'm like, I don't think we can add one more thing onto our list of to-dos and creations. And you convinced me because we were going to be able to talk to some of the most interesting, powerful minds on the planet, and that we get to use this information then to connect into what we do and what we create at Sakara.
Yeah, it's been a really reaffirming experience, hasn't it? And come home to this place of food as medicine. It makes me feel extremely grateful that we get to provide people with medicine. I know we each kind of have our own stories on how food became medicine. And if you haven't heard our stories, it's the first episode of the Sakara podcast. And it's worth a listen because stories are what help us find ourselves, help us remember kind of what we're seeking in life. And my hope is that by sharing some of my deepest, darkest insecurities and the shadow side of myself, that people will see themselves and then be reminded that they too can sit in the driver's seat of their health, even though they might be in their darkest place where I was once. The food that we create here at Sakara is designed to transform your gut and your microbiome health. And when you do that, you change everything about who you are. You change your mental health, you change your physical health, you change your spiritual health, you change your cellular health. When I'm out in the world, people will say, I love Sakara. And I always remind them that you don't have to be on this food program every single day. But if you come once a month for 3 days, or once a year for one of our 30-day resets, or once a year for 5 days in January, if that's all you can do, what it does is it transforms your gut, not just in the moment that you're eating the food, but in weeks and months after. It trains your gut to change the cravings you have, to change your metabolism. It transforms the strains of bacteria in your gut that inform your health for months to come.
That diversity of ingredients that you're getting into your body changes the diversity of bacteria in your gut, which is the epicenter of your health. And it supports your total body health, your immune system, your metabolism, your skin clarity and skin health, and how you age. And so I want to invite you, if you haven't tried Sakara before, you don't need to do this whole big shebang, clear your week and your schedule to do it. Figure out what is holding you back from giving yourself this gift, giving this yourself this step on your path to taking really good care of yourself. You deserve to feel good. You deserve to feel nourished in your body. And we are here to help you do that.
And Whit, we just have to say the one thing we always forget to say.
Oh yeah, it's really, really delicious.
We always talk about how it'll transform your body and your health and your microbiome. But man, our chefs are talented. It's delivered to your door, ready to eat. And it is so delicious. And that, by the way, is part of the nutrition, because you should enjoy the path to creating a body you feel good in. It should not feel like you're depriving yourself. I literally just ate chocolate, banana, granola.
I had a cookies and cream parfait.
I was actually thinking when I was pouring the milk this morning, I was like, I can't believe I used to think I had to deprive myself to have a body I felt good in, to have a body I felt sexy in. That's been the biggest change for me. Mm. So that's our wish for all of you, is to give you the food that helps you feel good and sexy.
You can find more details and how to customize your own plan on Sakara.com and enjoy 20% off your first order of our Sakara Signature Nutrition Program with code POD. That's code P-O-D at checkout for 20% off your first order. Order now. Dr. Elena Ivanina is a quadruple board certified integrative gastroenterologist and functional medicine practitioner that specializes in holistic and natural cures for a variety of gut conditions, ranging from SIBO and IBS to acid reflux and so much more. Dr. Ivanina's approach to gut healing involves a holistic view of the patient, with food as medicine playing a central role in her treatment plans. She believes that the food we eat can significantly impact our gut health and that dietary changes can be a powerful tool in improving gut conditions. She's also the founder and the force behind Gut Love, a community membership platform that prioritizes empowerment and education around gut health, helping their patients to understand the root causes of their gut conditions and providing them with the tools and resources they need to take control of their health. I love following her on social media, so be sure to check out her videos. So much good information in there and so much good information in this episode. Today, I'm so excited for you to take a listen and learn from her. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Elena Ivanina. Dr. Ivanina, welcome. Thank you for joining us on the Sakara Life podcast today.
Thank you, Whitney. So great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And we start every podcast with the same question, which is, what is your mission here on Earth? What are you here to do?
So I think what I've figured out is my mission is to help shed or put a spotlight on the gut health journey that we go through. And specifically in America, there is a very arduous one that starts out with lots of antibiotics and NSAIDs, alcohol in college, and there's an obstacle at every turn. And it's an insult to the gut. And that bucket of insults builds until people end up with chronic disease and, you know, chronic gut conditions. And I really feel like my place is to help people navigate those insults, understand them, try to avoid disease, and then if it happens, understand root cause and have a holistic approach to it.
I mean, I wish that there was somebody like you talking to me in my younger years, because I've had so many insults to my gut over the years, between antibiotics for acne to, you know, drinking in college and beyond, just so many insults that they do add up and you don't really realize it until later. But how did you get into this? Because you started out on a fairly traditional path, I would say, you know, getting your master's from Columbia and you're board certified, but you have such a holistic, integrative outlook. Where did that come from?
So I think I do have to give my mother some credit and my upbringing as something that started the ball rolling, because my family came from Russia and they really believed in the power of natural healing and food. So, for example, I am so thankful. Like, my mom really barely took me to a pediatrician sometimes because she understood that you could really, you know, heal a lot of fevers with rest and support. And so I didn't experience a lot of those insults of antibiotics as a child, and again, of processed food as well. She was so educated and I think ahead of her time, but it also came from living in a very process-free world where she grew up. And so I started realizing, like when I was even, I think in middle school, a little later, like, wow, everyone's getting all these stomach aches because they're all eating Cheetos. You know, there's such a difference from like what I feel when I'm eating well and what I feel like when obviously then I would go to everyone's house and eat those same things. And I'd be like, oh my God, I feel terrible, right? And then when I became really interested in GI, and it really, like, GI is such a fascinating field, gastroenterology, because it combines the intellectual kind of understanding of the gut with a hands-on experience, right? Like, I actually get to go in and experience your gut through endoscopy and colonoscopy and see it and biopsy it and actually tell you things that you would not know with labs or anything else, right? Like through biopsies. So it was such a combination of being able to understand things in a conceptual way and then having the hands-on approach. So I knew that, you know, I was really passionate about GI as soon as I found out about it. But then going through the traditional route of being a gastroenterologist, and I had a great team of people training me. I loved my training. I enjoyed every minute of it. But when I started practicing, I noticed just such a huge void. Mm. Traditional GI, like, and gastroenterology and training is great at teaching you how to find cancer, which is so important, obviously.
Very important,
like,
yep.
Extremely important, right? So it's absolutely the prioritized thing. And then after that, inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's and colitis, things with like real morbidity, mortality. What you kind of learn is like, you really look for those, but if they're not there, Okay. So then maybe there's what we call IBS, right?
Yeah.
So, and I just noticed like how much was missing. So thank goodness we could tell someone that they didn't have cancer, right? Thank goodness we had the tools to take these deep dives into these really important medical conditions. But there was a huge population of people who weren't getting answers.
Yeah. And I think I saw on your Instagram, which I love following you and your Instagram, by the way, but I think I saw that you posted a picture of a blueberry in somebody's colon the other day.
Yeah.
That was so wild. You really do get to see straight in on what's going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I, as much as I tell everyone to eat nuts and seeds and fiber, you know, if they eat it before their colonoscopy, I do see it in the colon, all those little quinoa kernels. I mean, it's a beautiful thing.
And I mean, that makes me think about what do you see? You really can see the effects of somebody's diet on the body. And so when you go in, can you tell what people have been eating? Or, I mean, aside from seeing actual food particles, is there a difference in the actual physical gut in the colon and the rest of the intestines?
So you definitely can. And it's going to open our whole conversation about fiber, right? And the fact that in America, people eat about 16 grams of fiber a day, right? The typical standard American diet versus in rural Africa, people maybe, you know, getting 100 plus grams of fiber a day. And there was actually a British surgeon named Dennis Burkitt who went to Uganda and first like just observed that there wasn't all this disease, like starting in your 40s, like people were getting, you know, people in England where he was used to practicing, you know, everyone had first asthma early on, then diabetes, and then starting to have, right, like more metabolic disease, obesity, and then of course, diverticulosis. Right here, it's like everybody has diverticulosis, and then we have such a high prevalence of colorectal cancer. So he went to Uganda and he was like, no one has these conditions. He really is kind of like the godfather of fiber, where he said, like, it really comes down to fiber, and fiber, when processed by your microbiome, creates short-chain fatty acids. And those are the secret to colon and gut health. Those protect you from diverticulosis and colon cancer and so many of our gut issues. So when you ask that, of course, I've never done colonoscopies in Uganda, but, you know, here it's kind of almost scary that like when I start scoping people again, starting even in their 30s, I start seeing diverticulosis.
Can you explain what diverticulosis is for our listeners?
So diverticulosis is a condition, it's a structural condition in the colon, but it actually can exist in other parts. But most commonly, we see it in the colon, and they are these little pouches. Your whole gut is this tube, right? That's what it comes down to. Your gut is actually, like what's in your gut is not even a part of your body, if you think about it, right? Because it's like this tube that goes from your mouth to your anus. And what we talk about the gut is what's inside, right? Microbiome. So in this beautiful tube that's usually nice and smooth, you start getting these pockets. And the way to think about it is when you don't have fiber that softens your stool and allows it to move forward effectively, then people start having this hard, dried out stool, right? They're constipated, the stool that causes people to have incomplete evacuation, right? I hear that term all the time. And it pushes on the wall of the colon. Mm. So you can imagine how chronic pushing will then cause these little out pouches. That is what diverticulosis is.
And then sometimes those pouches, they can get infected. Is that the case? Where that's where people really get into trouble, right?
Exactly. So there is actually a range of sequela, a range of issues that can happen due to having these pouches. So the most dangerous ones are having inflammation that can lead to infection. So that's called diverticulitis. And there's actually a push now. Before everyone with diverticulitis got antibiotics, now it's really important to call your doctor, your gastroenterologist, and actually see if you need antibiotics. Not everyone needs them.
Oh, that's a great tip. I think, you know, historically, if you were diagnosed with that, you were told stay away from nuts and seeds and popcorn, things that could get stuck in those little pockets. Is that still what people are recommending today? And I think that also did they even recommended kind of to stay away from fibrous foods, to eat cooked low fiber foods. So what are people talking about today?
So absolutely, that a lot of people still have that idea. A lot of old school, older doctors who may not be up to date with the evidence. JAMA is a famous medical publication. There was a big JAMA article that came out debunking that whole notion. And again, to the flip side, saying how important it is to have fiber. And it's actually constipation. What we usually see, like I'll do a colonoscopy and I see a hard stool ball stuck in one of those diverticula. So more than anything, it's the focus is movement and good quality stool.
Okay. And so you mentioned that the average American gets around 16 grams of fiber in a day. What is your recommendation? How many grams of fiber are you recommending to your patients?
Good question. The American Society of Dietitians usually recommends 25 for women, 38 for men. And that's because they usually do it per 1,000 calories eaten. That's why it's different for women and men. And based on all of the studies that have come out and Dr. Burkett's studies as well, I do think you want to pretty much take it as high as it can go, but the goal would be something like 50 grams, Whitney. But some people can even take it higher.
Something that Danielle and I have been harping about lately is that it's actually fibers, right? That there are different types of fiber. How do you recommend consuming your fiber?
One of the best, I think, one of my favorite eating experiences, I've done Saqqara, right? Because usually you can't cook for yourself like that. Like you are exposed to so many different fibers and they feed all the different gut bacteria, which then produce all the metabolites that affect your weight, your mood, your energy, everything, your good bowel movements, and you feel so much better, right? So because you do need the diversity. I just saw Danielle's reel about that, I think just a couple of days ago. I think the way you look at it, there are, of course, buckets. There's the idea of soluble fiber, which is like a gel, like psyllium husk. If anyone has eaten psyllium husk, you stir it in a glass of water, it's like this really thick gelatinous substance.
My mom used to buy these like fiber cookies that just turned into gel in your mouth kind of thing. You'd get gel stuck in between your teeth. That was very the old school kind of fiber.
Yeah, it's not a very appetizing experience. There's that soluble bucket. There's insoluble, and insoluble you think of as roughage. And then there's resistant starch, right? And there are four different types of resistant starch. For example, green banana, or talking about oats, it's even saying cooled white rice. Like there are different properties that happen to food that can make it a resistant starch and have that fiber effect. So there are so many different types of fibers and they are feeding different microbiome bugs in your gut. And that's why a restrictive diet is so dangerous, right? Because you are taking away from that beautiful, diverse diet of fiber.
Yeah, I see so much focus right now out in the world on protein, where people are forgetting about the fruits and the vegetables and the beans and things to focus on protein. And everybody's asking, where's the protein in this? But really, I think we should be focusing on where is the fiber? How much fiber are we getting? Because those gut bugs help you to digest the protein and make sure that you're getting the most out of the meals that you're eating. What about things like SIBO? You know, sometimes I hear people talking about SIBO and they're worried about FOS fiber. And is that something that people really need to be concerned about if they have SIBO, or should they be working on just strengthening up little by little their gut microbiome and kind of like taking your gut to the gym? What's your philosophy on that?
I do love the idea of taking your gut to the gym because it is a muscle, right? It's a tube that is a muscle in that its primary mechanism is to just move things forward, but it's also doing so much to it. But, you know, SIBO is a specific type of dysbiosis, right? Small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, of which we have now three different types. It's an overgrowth of a type of bug or archaea in your gut that produces a specific gas that then has specific effects in your gut, for example, changing your motility. So the thing about SIBO is now we have great testing for it. So first, you want to understand what type of SIBO you have. You want to understand where it came from. And then the treatment for SIBO, once you understand which type it is, because all the different types of SIBO treatment are different. So you want to focus on a way that decreases the overgrowth. Now, that is very difficult with food, Whitney, unless you're on a really restrictive diet. And so there are studies showing elemental diet can be helpful, but it's helpful in that when you do it, just as when you do a super restrictive diet and low FOS, GOS, fructans, everything else, right? You may feel better temporarily, but it's not solving the problem. And so that's what I see. Unfortunately, a lot of people get hung up on these limitations of diet, feeling better. But as soon as they eat, you know, what they want to eat to be a normal part of society and being able to go out, then they don't feel well again. So you have to actually address the overgrowth. And in the long run, optimizing your fiber is going to be the best way, as well as optimizing motility to decrease the chance of it coming back. So fiber is key, but in the moment, you have to decrease the overgrowth.
Can you improve your situation there by building up the other good bugs in your system so that there's not maybe as much room for an overgrowth? Could that be an approach that people take?
For prevention.
For prevention. Okay, so once you're into that situation, how do people typically work on SIBO?
Yeah, so once you actually have the diagnosis of SIBO, then there are natural, like, herbs that can very much help SIBO. I've had a lot of success, you know, because the typical training is to use antibiotics. And antibiotics also are very effective, but of course have their own side effects. And sometimes it's a little ironic that you would be treating something that antibiotics contributed to by taking more antibiotics. But in the right cases, it does work. But the idea is, again, you need to decrease the overgrowth. Then you maintain that new microbiome. So either with the natural and herbal antimicrobials or antibiotics, you decrease it, you maintain it, and then you build back stronger. And that's where, like you said, if you can really build back, you know, a really robust, like the two most important things about the microbiome are abundance and diversity. Right? So you want a lot of different bugs. And you're right. Like, if that's the case, that's why it makes your microbiome so strong, is that there is little chance for bad things to happen, like C. diff also, right? There's so many conditions that come from a weak microbiome.
And if you have SIBO, is that something that then you have to kind of keep in check forever? Or is it you fix it and then you're good?
So in most cases, there is an increased risk for SIBO to come back. So it is something that, again, if you understand your root cause, there are a lot of times where, you know, I see people who have recurrent SIBO because they haven't addressed their root cause.
What are some root causes that you see?
So some of the most famous ones are post-infectious, like so post-COVID. Right, is a really big one right now.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, COVID wreaks havoc on the microbiome. And SIBO, dysbiosis in general, and mast cell activation, histamine problems with food, huge with COVID. But the other biggest kind of bucket of root cause diagnosis is having a motility issue. And that can be from anything from having, of course, an autoimmune condition, scleroderma, Sjogren's, there are autoimmune conditions that are very closely associated with SIBO, but even diabetes, glucose toxicity, like when you have so much sugar in your bloodstream that it is injuring the nerves of your gut. It's injuring the sensation and motility. So it's something that is a little more subtle, of course, than getting an autoimmune condition. But that's where kind of that holistic approach comes in. You can improve so much of your gut health if you figure out that that's a piece of it. You treat the SIBO, and then you really treat the insulin resistance, you treat the motility, and you have better results.
Wow. So what are some of your top tips for improving motility, seeing that that is so important?
So I would say, you know, you build starting at what I would say is probably the most important to your health is fiber. So as we already discussed, you want to have enough fiber. Fiber has been shown in many studies to improve motility, right? Improve specifically colonic motility. So fiber is at the base of really good motility. And the next, not very far away piece is exercise. Exercise is so key. You know, the idea that if you don't move, your gut doesn't move. You know, and we see that very obviously postoperatively, right? People are like sitting around in bed, your gut just shuts down, right? Like there is no movement. So, you know, you build with those basics. Hydration is important. Not as much as those two, but those three together, I would say, are your real kind of core. On top of that, you always need to consider the balance of your autonomic nervous system, your parasympathetic and your sympathetic nervous systems, right? You have your fight or flight and rest or digest. And if you are living in fight and fight or flight, your motility is not working well, right? Because you're running from a bear, you're not going to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, you're not. Hey, bear, can you just stop for 1 second? I need to pause over here while I go to the bathroom. Thanks.
Right.
Yeah. And we don't realize how much stress we're under just in our regular day-to-day life and work and family, et cetera. So yeah, I think that that's an important piece. Danielle and I talked about this a little bit on our last poop conversation, where it's an actual phenomenon. And it was trending on TikTok about people talking about how when they go into bookstores or into the library, they get the urge to go to the bathroom. And I think it's because something about a bookstore just makes you feel relaxed, right?
It might be the book that you chose to read the last time you went to the bathroom, right? You're like, oh, I remember that great feeling.
People don't bring books to the bathroom anymore. I remember when I was a kid, like my dad always had books in the bathroom. And it was one of his sanctuaries, you know, he could escape the world and go in the bathroom and read some of his books. And now we're, I think, scrolling on our phones, which I'm not sure if that triggers the parasympathetic nervous system the same way as reading does.
Yeah, Whitney, you're totally right. I just potty trained my youngest daughter.
Congrats.
Thank you. With one hand, which was very difficult because my hand was broken. But anyway, it was, you know, such an amazing experience to see that when she sat down with one of her favorite books, she was just able to release and that it was so simple versus, you know, sometimes we would just try to engage her in conversation or something, but it really was sitting down with one of her favorite books, you know, Brown Bear or whatever it is, like she was just able to let it all go. And now everyone's on TikTok being like, oh, that person is so thin and what are they doing? And oh my gosh, look at her skin. Or like, I wish I had skin like, or like, you know, right? Like all these triggering thoughts, because that's what people are doing is comparing themselves. So yeah, I agree with you. Go to the bathroom with a book, but a short one.
I love that tip. Amazing. Or, you know, read a few pages from the book and get through it that way. But hopefully you're going to the bathroom every day and getting those pages in.
Yes, exactly.
So I want to ask you about something that I've seen. Is fiber nature's Ozempic?
Great question. So Ozempic acts on our natural body's peptides. Ozempic is an agonist of glucagon-like peptide 1. And that is our body's peptide. We have that in us. It's not like Ozempic came along and created this new mechanism for us all to lose weight, right? It's acting on something that is already in us. And the beautiful thing is that there are other things that act on it. Now, the reason that fiber is nature's Ozempic is that so they're called incretin hormones, right? This GLP-1. They are found in the cells of the gut. And for example, GLP-1 is actually found mostly in the later cells, like downstream, closer to the colon. And when you're eating a diet that is rapidly digested, which means there's no fiber, because the actual root, you know, definition of fiber is that it's not digested in your small intestine at all. It goes down to your colon where your microbes ferment it, producing those magical short-chain fatty acids and everything else, vitamins, vitamin K, right? All those amazing things. So what happens is, again, we just haven't been accessing that beautiful effect of GLP-1 in our American diet because things are getting rapidly metabolized. They're not reaching the lower gut. And what they've shown in studies are when you have something like psyllium or, you know, something when you're having a high fiber meal, it reaches the end of your gut and it does engage with GLP-1 and increase GLP-1. And not only that, because it's not, you know, GLP-1 is kind of an abstract idea. Like what does GLP-1 actually do, right? So GLP-1 actually can act throughout your entire body. It can go to your brain and tell you you're not hungry. It can work, they've been saying, on dopamine and addiction, right? There's so many things that GLP-1 does. And specifically, it also slows down your stomach, makes you feel more full. Well, what else does that? Fiber. Fiber, you know, so again, fiber's always been known to increase your satiety. And again, it also engages with that GLP-1 receptor having the same, you know, the same effects. But of course, as a medication, Ozempic is just a little stronger, but fiber does the same thing.
Wow. Having a mind blow moment right now around thinking about all of these different effects that I didn't kind of connect the dots on of what a highly processed diet, meaning it's low in fiber diet, does and how it affects you.
In every way. Every way.
Wild. You know, if we could just put the fiber back into our diets again, it could potentially help so much more beyond just gut motility and going to the bathroom every day. It could help so many different areas of your health and things like you're talking about potentially could help with addiction and who knows what else.
I honestly find it hard now to find a condition where fiber and short-chain fatty acids don't matter and your microbiome, right? Parkinson's. All the studies are now showing Parkinson's starts in your gut. Constipation is the first sign of Parkinson's, right? And studies have shown butyrate actually can decrease the motor symptoms of Parkinson's because it can affect your brain.
Wow. Really important stuff here. From my own personal journey and experience with having taken so many antibiotics over the course of my life and having a child, a son with an autoimmune condition, I just can't help but think about the connection between antibiotics and all of these different conditions we're seeing and the state of our health. What do you typically recommend if people have taken antibiotics? What do you recommend in order to help support a gut and help rebuild that gut microbiome?
Yeah, that's a great question because antibiotics will never go away. We need to understand how to decrease our usage of it and make it very appropriate only when absolutely necessary. Again, like, you know, always asking your doctor, but do I actually need it? The second piece is if you do, because they can be life-saving, then you arm yourself. Now, arming yourself starts before you get the antibiotic. Arming yourself means building up a strong microbiome even before, right? That's why it's important for anybody to just start today, right? To improve, to do the Saqqara gut program. I mean, like something like so enriching with fiber and different types of fiber, right? And the probiotics and everything that's a piece of it, because you need to go into the antibiotic with the strongest microbiome you can, okay? Same thing with COVID or an infection. You got to go into it ready. But then if you're in it, I do recommend prebiotics and probiotics while you take it. Because, you know, I agree with you. The effect of antibiotics is so deleterious to our immune system because, you know, I like to always talk about this concept because it's kind of easy to think about. Your microbiome and your immune system are right next to each other. Your microbiome is in that gut, inside your gut, and then your immune system is right next to it in the lining. And so when you are young and your microbiome is forming by the age of 3, you have developed, you know, from birth and you've hopefully sucked up some of mom's good microbes from the vagina during vaginal delivery. Then you get the, you know, you get the HMOs from breast milk, right? You're getting all these things to enrich your microbiome. And then, you know, when you're introducing foods 4 to 6 months, introducing a lot of the high fiber plant foods. So by 3 years old, or, you know, after the 1,000 kind of most important days of microbiome forming, that's you. That's you, Whitney. Like, that's your microbiome. And it'll change, but you have formed the core of your microbiome. And your immune system is like, this is me. We're friends, right? Like, this is me. I recognize all these bugs, even though they're bugs, but I know these are helpful for me and we are going to be BFFs, right? And then here come the antibiotics. And then the antibiotics change those bugs, right? That's what they do. They deplete some of the good ones. Some of the bad ones can overgrow. And then one day when that bucket fills, your immune system is like, who is this? I don't recognize these people anymore. This is not me. And that's where autoimmune disease in a lot of cases comes from.
Wow. Interesting. And so I know acromantia is important for this gut lining. Can you explain what is acromantia and why is it important?
Yes, Acromantia mucinophilia is like the hot, hot probiotic these days, and for good reason. It is a probiotic that supports the mucus layer that is basically in between what's in your gut and the lining. And there's a lot going on there that's really important. And actually, acromantia, interestingly enough, to our previous conversation, affects GLP-1 and increases it to also really help with metabolic conditions and weight loss and everything that GLP-1 is associated with. So a lot of acromantia, especially, you know, it's kind of a little bit of the chicken and the egg, you know, as you fall into the westernized way of life and eating. And it's both. It's life and eating, right? Because life is, it's that imbalance between parasympathetic and sympathetic because we're always stressed, poor sleep, we're disconnected with our circadian rhythm, right? There's so much there. And then the fiber depletion too. It's like we're so broken, right? And so you have that. And so that's changed your microbiome, depleted your acromantia, and depleted your mucus layer. So your mucus layer is not strong. And when your mucus layer is not strong, then there's increased possibility for what we call intestinal hyperpermeability or leaky gut. And so now we understand so much about acromantia, how to feed it with polyphenols, pomegranate, right? Like all these beautiful red vegetables, fruits, and taking a probiotic.
In almost every podcast that we record, we just come back to it's not that complicated. Like, eat whole foods that contain fiber in them. Get a nice diversity of them into your diet so you're eating the rainbow. Make sure that you're moving. Reduce your stress levels. Get sunshine. Drink clean water, right? That it's all of these basics can do wonders for your health and to just bring us back into that natural state of being that the lifestyle that we live in, that the diet that we're eating is not how nature intended. It's not the way that nature built it to be. And so being out of balance with nature creates dis-ease within our bodies.
You're so right. You're so right. It's so true. We are equipped. We've got that GLP-1. Our body is made to function and made to heal from like little injuries. But what we've done is the westernization of our society and our food has broken the whole apparatus down. And then it's really hard to fix, right? It's really hard to fix, but you're totally right. From the get-go, you just got to focus on being in tune with being natural in your body, in your food, with the sun, like you said, everything. Yep.
Yeah. What are your top tips? Do you have any like favorite foods that people should include into their diet if they want to support their gut and boost acromantia and support their health?
Absolutely. So for boosting acromantia, I do think pomegranate is phenomenal. So in studies, they've shown pomegranate and cranberry actually boost acromantia. And it's interesting, like it's so driven by metabolic issues. Like even if you take metformin, metformin boosts acromantia, right? So again, it's like if you're
healing
your metabolic state, that will also help. You know, now we're again learning like eat the rainbow, but why, right? Like what? Was there any science behind it? Yes, it's the colors, right? It's the polyphenols. It's that pomegranate, right? It's got so much goodness in it, antioxidants and everything. So I love, love, love pomegranate from acromantia. I love kiwis for Faecalibacterium praesnitzii. In many studies, kiwis have been shown to be helpful to go to the bathroom. 2 kiwis a day keep the gastroenterologist away is what I like to say. So kiwis are really helpful. And my last one would be Jerusalem artichokes, because there is nothing that will work your gut out like a sunchoke.
Wow, amazing. I love that. I feel like the gut microbiome is something we talk about in every episode of the Sakara Life podcast. And I think people just still don't understand just how profound the gut microbiome is and how important it is to your overall health. It affects every system in your body, from your hormone health to your brain chemicals, your digestion, your metabolism, your sex drive. It really is the epicenter of our health. And yet people
are getting like half of the fiber, daily fiber they should be getting. I mean, when we set out to create Sakara, we anchored it on gut health because we both had such gut dysbiosis and imbalanced microbes. And we know the number one indicator of a healthy gut is having a diversity of microbes, but nobody really knows what that means or how to get it. Or I think it's really confusing to people. It's like, okay, I have all this bacteria in my gut. And what, I need to take care of them? It's hard to imagine how microbes in your gut can impact your cardiometabolic health or your mental health or your hormonal health or your fertility, all of these things. But every time, like it's so entrenched in the literature at this point that every time you look at any disease, you can start to correlate changes in the microbiome. So if we can start with the gut and kind of like work backwards, that's still an amazing approach to overall health.
Probiotics are really important. We've been talking about probiotics for a long time, but I think more and more people are starting to talk about prebiotics. And it's something you and I talk about a lot, about fibers, plural. There's not just one type of fiber. There's multiple types of fibers. And they go in and they feed those microbes within our gut. That's what our microbes like to eat. If you want to be building up a healthy ecosystem of good microbes in your gut, they like to eat prebiotic fibers. They like to eat polyphenols, resistant starches. That's what they like to live on. And that's how they're going to proliferate in your gut.
Well, we are so excited to talk about our Sakara fiber super powder, you guys, because it took us 3 years to make. And we really made it because if you think about what is one of the most important things you can get into your diet every single day, it really is fiber. I mean, 95% of Americans are not getting enough fiber every single day. We're in this fiber epidemic. And so we really wanted to create a fiber that would really help you hit that 35 to 50 grams of fiber, which by the way, you guys, most people are getting under 15.
you know, they say you should get 25, but when you study functional medicine, they say you should get 35 to 50 grams. And if you eat Sakara breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you're getting 35 to 50 grams every day. And so in creating this product, we thought, how can we help people reach that number who can't eat our meals? If that's the number one determining factor of a healthy gut, how can we help people really build those healthy guts? So you get 6 grams of fiber from 10 sources of fruits and vegetable. We have prebiotic fiber in there as well as digestive enzymes. So it's not just fiber like your grandmother's fiber. It's fiber from 10 different sources plus these digestive enzymes and prebiotics that really help you stay regular, decrease bloat, help with satiety.
Ooh, we're making fiber sexy again.
It's about time.
You can find more details and enjoy 20% off your first order with code POD. That's code POD at checkout for 20% off your first order. Order now. So circling back, we touched on it for a second, but you know, I'd love to just get your thoughts around protein and what you see from your standpoint as a gastroenterologist.
So I do believe that protein, of course, is important, and especially for women as we age. And it's so important to keep up our musculoskeletal health to support our bones and things like that. So I understand where some of this protein push has come from, but it's also coming from a place of depletion of food that has no protein and no fiber, right? So some people are pushing to protein, and people who appreciate the microbiome and the benefits are, you know, now going kind of towards the fiber way. But, you know, the idea is you marry them both. You need to marry them both. And the protein should not be forced down your gut in a cookies and cream whey protein shake 3 times a day with your protein bar, right? Like, that's not natural. That's not going to be helpful for you. But if you eat your good, clean protein, especially from plants, right? Like my favorite go-to is like lentil pasta. You cannot go wrong with lentil pasta. It is so high in fiber and it is so high in protein. And your kids would eat it, right?
Yes.
So it's like there are ways to marry the two without just being strict like, okay, I weigh 150 pounds, which means I need to be getting 150 grams of protein. Wow, that's a ridiculous amount of protein. And to get, right? But people have said that, right, that amount, 1 gram per pound. And to get that, you can't eat anything but protein to get 150 grams of protein in. So you need to have your own individualized path. So maybe there is someone who's sarcopenic, who has lost a lot of muscle mass. Maybe they do need to focus a little bit more on protein sometimes. But that's why the individual approach and having a practitioner who understands you, your labs, understands what's going on inside your body. Like that's so important because there is no one way of eating this much protein or that much protein. It's who are you? What is happening in your body? How much protein is good for you based on your activity level and again, your age and your gender and everything else. And then of course the fiber, how high can we go and marry the two to meet the needs of your body?
Yeah, interesting that you're saying that fiber and protein can potentially have the same outcome. If you're looking at sarcopenia as one of the main factors that you're trying to avoid, that muscle loss, right, that there are a number of studies around the gut microbiome and sarcopenia. I know that Danielle was studying that in one of her courses and wrote a paper specifically about that and about how your gut microbiome impacts your muscles, especially as you age. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this trend plays out. Like we said, it always comes back to that balance and being in balance with nature.
Yeah, I think that as I've experienced so many patients going through restrictive diets and how negatively that impacts not only your gut, but your whole being, your mental health, right? There's so much negativity around restrictive eating and how it affects you. And so I really have focused my healing of the gut to be a positive approach and to focus instead understanding what your needs are. But it's the five P's. It's the prebiotics, the probiotics, the postbiotics, the protein, and the polyphenols. And you have to marry them. If you only eat probiotics your whole life, you know, maybe you'll have a good amount of lactobacillus if all you eat is yogurt, but what about everything else, right? Like, look at it in a macro way and just nourish your body positively with all of the things, but just very minimal processed food, right? That's the thing that we can restrict, but instead of seeing it as a restriction, you see it as like a medically necessary step in healing, right? It's not good for you versus all the plants and all the things that you can eat that each have healing properties.
Absolutely. And what about enzymes? I'm kind of obsessed with enzymes. I love enzymes in my home cleaning products and in my skincare. And I think enzymes are also a really important factor of how we digest our food, how we assimilate our nutrients. What are your thoughts on enzymes?
I love enzymes. Enzymes make the world go round in many ways. So part of the conversation goes back to our conversation about how we need to get away from the Western lifestyle where you are eating a meal in front of your computer, on your phone, doing your work, not thinking about what you're eating, not connecting, right? Because digestion and the release of digestive enzymes happens before you even put that first forkful of food in your mouth. This has been studied so much that when you think about food, when you smell it, you start building up digestive enzymes, releasing digestive enzymes, right? Starting with amylase in your mouth. So after that, then you, of course, ingest the food. And in the stomach, you have protease breaking down protein. You have your stomach acid, right, helping break down protein and different nutrients like iron. And then, of course, you have your pancreatic enzymes releasing things like lipase for fat, also more amylase. You have your gallbladder releasing bile to break down fat. And then you have all your enzymes in the gut that break down lactose and sucrose and maltose and palatinose and all those things. So enzymes are key to digestion. And it is such a beautiful orchestration, like your body is, having all these enzymes that work in specific ways to digest your food properly. And so the first thing would be like step back and think about how you're eating. Take a deep breath before you eat your meal, right? Like really connect with your food, hopefully having a social setting with people talking, enjoying it, cooking it together, growing it together, you know, if you can, the whole thing. So optimizing your digestion with your digestive enzymes that way, repleting them if necessary, and then also using them therapeutically, Whitney, right? Like, so they are a biofilm breaker. They help people decrease the amount of overgrowth, whether it's bacterial, whether it's fungal. This is a very new kind of area of research, right? But they are one of the main factors that help us decrease those hard-to-reach bugs causing overgrowth.
Wow, really cool. I just feel like we're just still at the beginning of really understanding how important the gut microbiome is, all of the different functions it does in our body, like you're talking about with triggering GLP-1 in the gut and enzymes. And there's just so much for us to learn and explore in this world. And so thank you for all of the work that you're doing to help make this knowledge and information more accessible. I think you're doing a great job teaching on your social platforms and helping people get to the root cause through your practice. I know I already asked you for your tips, but do you have a light work practice for our Sakara Light listeners?
Sure. I think there are two fun things that everyone can do today that will help them understand their gut. and optimize it. And the first one is to understand how much fiber you're getting. Use a tracker. Try one day, 2 days of using, right, MyFitnessPal or something easy. And just see, like, where are you on that spectrum of, you know, 16 to 100 grams? Where are you on a normal day? It's so fascinating to see that number and then understand how you can improve it. And my other favorite tool is actually looking at your stool, and you can use different apps also. Like there's one called Dieta, D-I-E-T-A, health app, which helps you understand the Bristol of your stool, right? Like so many people tell me, oh, I have no problem with my stool. I poop every day. Well, when you actually start looking at your stool, and this is actually an app that uses AI to also help tell you and assist you with understanding where you are on the Bristol of understanding if you're constipated or not. And so like it helps you be connected to your gut because that's a piece of the puzzle that we've broken along the way. We've disconnected ourselves. And so one fun experiment is to use these apps, reconnect, understand where you are, and then, you know, go on one of these amazing Saqqara, you know, adventures and feed your bugs like a million different, you know, different fibers and probiotics and polyphenols and all those things, because you are doing an amazing job nourishing the people, everybody who needs it.
Thank you. I love those. I'm going to check out that app that you mentioned, Dieta app. I'm going to check that out for sure. But thank you so much. This was fun talking about gut with you. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks so much for having me.